Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on something that is admittedly not an incredibly sexy topic, but it is one that dramatically impacts the bottom line of every collection agency: how and when to select a new software provider. There are more software applications available to collection agencies than ever before, and each solution has its own bells and whistles. Comparing, contrasting, and evaluating those offerings to determine which is the best fit can be a cumbersome and disorganized process. I'm looking forward to hearing what our panel of ARM industry experts has to say on this important topic. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Interpros. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform, my mother tells me. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Jonathan Harbin is the Chief Information Officer at Frost Arnett. Jonathan and his team are responsible for managing the ever-increasing amount of data flowing through the company. Before joining Frost Arnett, he worked in technology-related fields at Nashville-based healthcare companies for more than 10 years. Jonathan earned a bachelor's degree in information technology from Middle Tennessee State University and is a certified information systems security professional. Ed Sala is the owner of Acer Capital Recovery, a collection agency that specializes in medical and healthcare accounts. Ed has been an active member of the collections industry for nearly two decades, having worked his way up to owning his own collection agency. He has played an active role within ACA International and is a very respected member of the ARM industry. Born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, Ryan Wiswall grew up hearing about the debt collection business through his father and his grandfather. Nevertheless, he joined the Air Force at 18 and pursued a career in pararescue. But a few years later, he had an unfortunate parachute accident that changed the course of his professional career in the military. At the time, what seemed like a significant blow turned into a blessing when he started to work for the family business while attending school. Today, Ryan is the vice president of Columbia Collectors, a company that was first started by his grandfather in 1957. Now he is the third generation to lead the business and continue the family legacy. With many passions that are both analytical and creative, Ryan brings a unique approach to the business. He sees the industry as an opportunity to help businesses and individuals by simplifying the process of collection and leveraging communication through technology. His passion for youth education led him to start an internship program in partnership with the Cascadia Tech Academy. 4 years later, he runs two internship programs for both IT and legal departments and sits on the board of advisors for the school. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please type it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is an audio-only event, so if you're not seeing anything on your screens, you're not missing anything. A recording of this event is being recorded, and a recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. There. Now that all that is out of the way, let's launch our discussion. So, the first thing I want to ask is something, a high-level question, and we'll start to burrow down from there. What are some of the reasons why a collection agency should consider switching either a service provider or a software system? And Ryan will give you the honor of answering first.
Sure, I appreciate that, and thank you for introducing me. So one of the reasons why we have looked at and considered another service provider software system is because of the dynamic changes that are happening with softwares in general. As you see, Microsoft and other service providers and technology companies have been advancing a lot of solutions out there for different programming, and naturally our agency and us look to the collection software realm to fit those needs and collaborate with those newer softwares. As many of you know, we have some limitations when it comes to legal requirements and what we can and cannot do, but nevertheless we still want those options to be able to integrate. So when we're on some older platforms or other software companies, we look to have certain things like integrated text, VoIP phone system integration for unified communications, where call recording would be directly attached to a screen, things from end user capabilities for the collectors, from analytics, letting them know how many calls they may have up in the corner, to management style analytics as well. So all these things really get into what gives us the capability to be a better collection agency and what are we looking for in the future. So,
excellent. Well, I appreciate the start. Ed, Jonathan, anything else you want to add to some of the reasons why a collection agency might consider switching a service provider or a software system?
No, I agree with Ryan. I think a lot of it comes down to compliance and what the system can do to help automate your processes. Anything that can help us be more efficient is going to help the business overall. So, and a lot of that are compliance requirements of the system that can provide, help you meet those compliance requirements in an automated way is going to pay for itself.
Yeah, I know many of you attending look at your softwares out there, and you, all of us have our things that we've either become accustomed to or have manipulated our softwares to do. Some of those on older systems, if you're familiar with technology, multi-value databases, which was a big proponent of the financial industry back in the 80s, have been built upon, and they have a lot of great details, but really it doesn't integrate with a lot of larger software companies nowadays. We're finding a lot of fixes, a lot of duct tape solutions, and it's getting to the point where things are advancing so quick that that's not really good enough, at least for us. So we always look for solutions that are going to be easily integrated and dynamic, and some of the things that I have on my wish list as far as moving company forward are either heavy investments forms or are really incapable of servicing us as a small or medium-sized business. So, and I would assume that you guys are on the same page, right, Ed?
Did we lose Ed? Maybe we lost Ed.
John,
that's
there?
Why I was on mute. First and foremost, Ryan, I want to say thank you for your service. Everybody, a part of this, you know, appreciates everything that you've done and putting your life out on the line and everything else. So thank you. I agree with everything both gentlemen said. I think with in regards to switching or looking at a new service provider, is that new service provider forward thinking? Are they able to think out of the box and take a different look at the collection software and the platform to allow us to go into, you know, into the future? Because a lot of these databases now are just, they're not prepared for that. And to bite off what was said, they're antiquated. You can only, you know, with the value system, you're putting in the information, but you're not getting information out of it.
Correct. And that's one of those old adages, data in versus data out. And as we look at our software, you know, like I said in the bio, I run a internship program, and a lot of these students that are coming from, you know, I may have three interns in a year. Where they're seeing a lot of their training is in languages like Python. The only way to connect to the our premise-based software we have right now is through ODBC, Microsoft's connectivity tool. Really, that's okay for servicing small little parts to make things work, but it's not something when they get into the programming aspect, in this case, ours is PIC, the PIC language, they look at me and they're confused. So I look at this and I said, is this really foolproof? Is this future proof? And the quick answer is no. And we need to find a cloud-based software that is dynamic enough and adaptable enough and future-proofing themselves. And, you know, I've seen a few solutions out there as well, like Interpros being one of them. So,
yeah, and to add on a little bit, one of the questions and comments came up a second ago where someone said it's old and costly to work with. And we've definitely seen that as the case, too. We are now on a tool that is a lot of things Ryan mentioned, able to work in the cloud and using more modern programming languages. But it's also extremely expensive. And I know we'll probably get to talk about that more throughout the webinar, but we moved to a new system. It took 4 years to convert. So I think we underestimate how hard it is to convert this data into new systems, recreate all the processes that you've created over the years, and don't miss a beat. You know, I think we'll get into that more. Definitely to the comment, it's right. It's old and costly to work with, but your option is to move on to a more modern platform, and it's going to be costly as well. But at least you, you know, will be on something that's going to be updated and able to find more developers for, like Ryan mentioned.
Yeah, I agree. Ed, I think, you know, to answer the original question as far as looking for why look for another software or service provider, and it's a simple thing. It's adaptability. Is it something that we can continue on for the next 10, 20 plus years? And good indicators for that is it compatible or integratable with other software systems out in the technology world? So, you know, the laws are going to change at the pace that they change, but inevitably we need to have a service provider that recognizes the need for those integrations and provides those and lets the companies dictate what laws they're going to follow and how they're going to follow suit.
Excellent. Well, that's a great start. At this point, what I want to do is just pause the discussion for a moment and invite Aaron Ryder from InterProach to say a few words. Aaron?
Thanks, Mike. And thank you again to all of our panels today, Ryan, Jonathan, and Ed. Appreciate you guys devoting some time to this today.
Absolutely.
InterProach, we're pretty excited to sponsor this webinar topic because it's near and dear to our hearts. Every day we interact with professionals who are considering a very significant decision of choosing a collection software. So as our panelists are discussing, the way consumers and employees interact with technology has changed. Communication norms have evolved, and navigating the various options in the market to select the best fit for a company's use case is challenging. It comes down to asking the right questions, knowing which boxes to pick, and understanding the terminology that we as software providers tend to sprinkle into conversations as though everyone knows what we're talking about. At InterProach, we consider ourselves a service company first that happens to make world-class software platforms for debt recovery. Our relationships with our customers are partnerships because, look, it sounds cliched, but our success is directly tied to the success of our clients that build their businesses upon our software, which is called ACE. Take it very seriously. So to help our customers stay competitive, we leverage Amazon's AWS infrastructure. It helps us lead the industry in inherited security and compliance, as well as processing speed. It saves our customers time and money by eliminating on-premises hardware and infrastructure audits or penetration testing. And through our browser-based interface, monthly updates and upgrades to the platform are included, which keep us at the forefront of the technology and the third-party technologies that we can integrate. So InterProach is devoted to supporting the debt recovery market. It's all we do. We're really great at it. And if anyone on the call is looking to modernize, to leverage new technologies as they arise, or looking for better relationships with your software provider, feel supported, InterProach is here for you. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Aaron, and thanks again to InterProach for sponsoring today's event. You know, we're just getting started. We're, you know, we still got a ways to go in our discussion. But one of the things that I really haven't heard yet, and I want to bring it up now, is any mention of sort of cost. And, you know, we're talking about efficiency, automation, you know, integration, all of these things, but no one's really sort of mentioned how much the system costs. So I'm curious, is that, you know, where on the list of importance does that sort of fit in terms of the criteria when selecting a new software? And maybe, Ed, you can tackle this first one this time.
Cost is a big part of it. You know, some software companies charge a flat fee. Some charge a flat fee to start up plus user costs, and then have other add-on benefits and features that have ongoing legacy costs to that. But I think for the most part, it's you know, what are you comfortable spending? What are your budgets? Are you getting a bang for your buck? Is service available immediately? If you have a question, can you text somebody or, you know, jump into a chat room or give them a phone call? Are they readily available? For me, that's what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think price is, you know, one of the top two. Price and service slash adaptability. A lot of times, I know when people are evaluating these systems, things that get lumped into that price later that you didn't expect are, you know, well, I thought this was going to be covered by support, and no, the vendor has deemed that it's a custom development or something else that's not covered by support, and that, you know, adds up extremely quickly. Custom features, adaptability, I think it's very important to have that conversation with the vendors up front as to what exactly is included, and coming up with some scenarios and asking, would this be support or is this custom development? Otherwise, you can be in for a nasty surprise.
Yeah, I believe that, you know, with any market out there, it's a dynamic thing. So cost and service are going to go hand in hand with what the market out there is able to deliver. So some of the older platforms are on an older model, and their capabilities are overshadowed by these newer products. And then if you throw service in, or price into that, sometimes they're able to sell at a better platform. I know from our experience looking at simple things like a transmitting letters, right? So we all have to send out letters, some more than others. Some are trying to push more technology-based platforms where others are going and still kicking out tons of first notices and statement letters and physical letters. When we're transmitting letters out, I would expect that to be as part of the bundled service nowadays. It's not something that is, in my opinion, something that's very hard to do. Back in the day when we had to run, you know, like a 56K modem, dial up and send out, we actually were doing that for free. Now they're adding in all these little services. And from what we've seen, we're being charged from one of our vendors about $160 to $170 a month just to transmit monthly our letters out, where they're still making money for that. I look at that as something, especially if it fails, something that's a hindrance. It's, you know, if you look at Salesforce Online, for instance, their one user platform to run their whole CRM program that has tons of tools integrated is less than $160 a month. So part of it, I think, is our market trying to figure out where that new price break is going to be with cloud-based platforms. I'm really looking forward to a lot of changes in probably the next 5 years to see where collection agency software is going to go. But I start looking at little nuances like that and saying, okay, are they trying to fit a older style mentality with software into a new platform or new world? So that's just one example that I've seen. Have you guys seen anything else as far as costs that you look at and go, why am I having to pay for this, or what would I expect?
Well, I'm trying to think if I see any costs involved with that. Our software provider is pretty good.
So they've been able to provide a turnkey service, right?
They get a pretty much a turnkey service. So
yeah.
Except for if you're going to integrate, say, a merchant account or, you know, payment processing account or something like that, they may charge X amount for that. But for the most part, they're pretty good. Although the hourly fee for a special project that we may have coming up, or a client wants something done a specific way, that can get very, very costly.
Yeah. I think one big thing that factors in, and different companies obviously address this in different ways, is what can that software handle and what's going to be out of that scope that they're going to have to bring in another additional service provider, whether they're creating a marketplace where they're extending out to letter service vendors, skip tracers, so on and so forth. More and more, the software capabilities are being able to handle a lot more. Like some older companies had to add on imaging services, right? So that was an additional cost to a lot of agencies. Nowadays, that's something that is pretty simple storage-wise. It should just be adapted and part of it. So the older platforms are charging you a premium or charging you extra, whereas the newer softwares that are starting to find easier ways to integrate, It's like, look, this is a way we can, one, make money and just integrate it into a full service product. More and more, I know I've seen, I'm starting to expect that from the software. So, you know, it should just be naturally attached. It should be easy to recall data and images. Reporting aspects should be live and, again, dynamic. I should be able to call out a report and see, you know, what last year was compared to this year. So, and all those things factor into cost when we're measuring that against each platform.
Yeah, and I think another thing too, one that definitely surprised us, moving from our old system to the new, is the total cost of ownership, including those services, including, you know, what's included in support versus custom development. And then another aspect that really surprised us was the personnel requirements that went up with the newer software. The newer software enabled us to have a 1,000 more capabilities than we had before, but we now had to hire a DBA to manage the database. We now needed more system analysts to be able to, and higher end technology employees. You know, before we were able to have collection managers that could do a lot of the work, and a lot of that with these more advanced systems is shifting towards requiring higher level IT people, which drives the expense up quite a bit as well.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I've been seeing that as well. And it's that kind of goes back full circle to what language and what platform is it built on. So, you know, some of those older premise-based software, they're built on languages that your guy that you hire may cost you $250 to $300 an hour, where some of these newer languages, you're talking maybe $100 or less. And obviously that doesn't even get into the compliance aspect of, you know, how do they write code and how do they protect against, you know, certain requirements such as HIPAA. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jonathan, how do you account for that? You know, having that you're going to, I mean, at what point do you sort of realize that you're going to need to hire a database administrator or systems analyst, or sort of, you know, you're actually going, you know, you're going to have to incur these additional expenses beyond what you were expecting because the new technology is so much more complex than what you've been using?
Yeah, I mean, that's something we definitely did not do well. It was a surprise to us. I'm not sure the best way. I mean, the one thing that looking back, I would say to look at is, for instance, our old system, you know, may have had a couple hundred data points as far as, you know, notes and account numbers and balances and all the basics. When we moved to the new system, it's now tracking thousands to tens of thousands of data points. And I know one analysis I did, an account in our old system compared to an account in our new system, the new system takes up 179 times more disk space because of all of the new data points that it's covering. Now, it's a good thing. It's opening us out with PCI, HIPAA, reporting to our clients. It's given us a lot of new capabilities, but it's also vastly increased the technical complexity. So I would say to make sure and look at that. If you're going from a couple hundred data points to tens of thousands of data points, you're going to need someone who can manage that, you know, very, very large database and the system analysts around that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's kind of where the market is trending, is disk space is so cheap nowadays compared to when it was back in, say, 2000. You know, 10 gigabytes was premium. It would cost us versus nowadays. I actually heard that Apple, with their phone system, they're going to be launching integrated cloud, so people aren't going to be having to back up. I think this is going to be a trending pattern with a lot of companies because the disk space is so cheap that they're just going to be hosting everything online. So what that means is you're going to have all this data and information sitting on the cloud. There's, you know, obviously companies like Amazon are meeting the compliance requirements, but that means for individual companies like ourselves, we're going to have to figure out how to aggregate that data, how to analyze that data. And that's going to require people who are trained in noticing patterns and trends. And then for each agency, making sure they have good policies on how do we input that data, you know, making sure we have good data in and good data out, because that's really where most companies are going to be able to leverage. And I see these collection software companies helping aid that by creating platforms that can either analyze it better, feed out data and show us what we need to see, or give us proper tools to manipulate that data. So.
Now, Ed, as a relatively smaller or agency that's sort of on the smaller side, how do you sort of account for the need to hire these sort of non, I guess, collector positions and sort of more IT positions? Is it something you would do on a contract basis, or is it something where you just kind of got to bite the bullet and hire the person, you know, for that job?
No, we went to a cloud software based company, and they will handle all the IT aspects of their software. That's not an additional cost that we'll absorb. In order for me to absorb that additional cost, I'd have to bring on, you know, a ton more clients and you know, collect a heck of a lot more money. So we made that decision consciously to make sure that the software vendor that we went with, you know, is compliant, has great policies, uses, you know, the Amazon cloud and their backup systems. But they take on the IT.
I think that brings up a great point. And that kind of goes back to that whole total cost of ownership. When each one of us is looking at platforms, we're going to, at the end of the day, say, how much money did our agency make and what margins can we invest back into either the company or grow our employment staff? Ideally, I've wanted and I have seen some platforms out there where they're giving forecasting and metrics that will show us comparisons on how much money the agency's making, what our margins are, if it's something we can scale. You know, any business individual is going to be looking at how they can make the best margins and obviously stay compliant and run the best agency possible. So I really do believe with all this data, it's a good thing if you can feed that back to the decision makers within the business, and they can say, okay, well, if I can scale this by X percent, then I can afford a data analyst, or I can afford investment in our IT staff, or hire out or outsource, or bring on a compliance officer. Those are those pieces of information that the smaller businesses can really leverage with a good collection platform or software. Now, obviously, each one of us has to have a good plan on how to implement that, but we have to have that data and information up front. So.
Okay. This is actually funny. It's a question that I wanted to ask next to the panel, and it's also a question that someone from the audience asked. Managing client expectations in terms of, you know, what they're expecting you to be able to do with your software, as well as what they're able to see, what they're able to access, and what you're reporting back to them. What are you seeing, hearing in terms of what the clients are looking for these days? And how does that sort of align with what software, what service providers you're using? Maybe Jonathan, you could take that one first.
Yeah, so our collection agency is 100% healthcare, so I'll be focused on that industry. A couple of the things that we're seeing. So many of our clients require that we have a online portal that they can log into and see the accounts that have been placed with us, with real-time status, balance, and you know what collection activity has taken place, phone calls, letters sent, et cetera. That one has been a big rub for me. I would say maybe 10% of our clients request it, but it's a huge security risk to have a portal sitting out on the internet that has access to your entire collections database. There's a lot of controls you can put around it, firewalls, all kinds of, you know, user access control, all that. But at the end of the day, you've got a portal sitting out on the internet. So that one is something that we've struggled with. But as far as reporting goes too, I think a lot of clients, they want the basics. They want, you know, what's the performance that we're sending to you? Because a lot of times we're being compared to competitors. They're doing Champion Challenger, and they want to see how our performance is compared to that other agency. And that's kind of the table stakes. I think after that, there's a lot of integration. I know at least in healthcare, and I'm sure in other industries, where they want you to be able to remit payments to their bank. They want ACH, EFT automated. They want return reports of accounts that we've deemed uncollectible to send back into their system to go on to a second agency or whatever else they want to do with it at that point. But we're noticing, especially with larger and larger hospitals, that we went from 1 to 2 data integrations and reports to now these hospitals wanting 30 or 40 different integrations between our system and theirs.
Yeah, and I'm, we're not solely in healthcare. We have healthcare clients that we're integrating with. I agree with you 100% in what you just said. One of the big companies that I'm sure everybody has seen, Epic Software Systems, is one that we use to measure integrations. Looking at any of our collection software that we integrate, we want to make sure that those software systems are going to play nice. Our clientele are expecting us to remit, not only total amounts collected, but they want to know transactional IDs. They want to know the transactional amounts that are remitted. And back in the day when we used to report this stuff via paper or individual person, there's, like you were saying, so many of these transactions and granular data being reported, it has to be automated. So one of our deciding factors has been, can the software support these integrations seamlessly and give our clients what they want? And I'm starting to see some of the softwares out there adhere to that. I don't think it's a perfect system yet, but we're starting to see some progress, which is nice.
Now, I'd like to get back on the topic of the client portal. We have the same concerns, sure, with the client portal, the same exact concerns that were brought up. Obviously, we can restrict their access from time of day, IP address, and other factors that we can restrict what they see, what actions they can take on the system and all that. But what we're looking at, and I was talking to our attorney, putting together a document that gives them that they actually sign and say, we will not use this portal for anything other than what is specified for. Meaning also not having any type of recording devices assigned to it, not having any type of recording devices in or around the office when our portal is accessed. Something that's just a safety measure for us.
Yeah, I believe so. Looking through some of these questions, I think, security requirements are a big concern for not only the agencies themselves. Obviously, everybody wants to comply and not have some lawsuit on their hands, which is understandable. But we all are looking to make sure that we're giving both our clients access, but making sure we're meeting those security requirements. And I think it's a bit of a tug of war on where that balance is. So I'm sure you guys have had many discussions on what the clients are requesting versus protecting the agency and the clients themselves, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So,
It's a delicate balance. It's definitely a delicate balance. You want to give your client what they want. Unfortunately, we all know, some clients can be tougher than others. And when you say no to a client, they're going to start looking elsewhere. It's definitely a delicate balance.
Yeah. And, I don't think software can solve all agency problems, but more and more as things advance and integrate with security requirements and hopefully these laws are following, there's more that they can do. So, when a client goes out and requests that they have a access portal, we want to be able to give it to them. And then we have our concerns. We'll make those cases. But ultimately, I think a collection software should be able to serve up that portal. Be aware of the laws that we're having to face or compliance standards that we're having to face. Create things like audit trails, audit reports or audit logs, making sure that they're stored on appropriate servers and having certain compliance standards. And then ultimately, it's down to the agency to make sure that they're protecting those interests the best, like doing reviews every once in a while or having policies on when they're reviewing who has access to what, and making sure there's correct policies on if accounts are inactive or created, or if something isn't looking right, that we have reports back to us saying, here's an alert, here's something you need to look at. So, yeah, I don't completely, you know, back the whole restricting the client completely out of access to their information. But I agree that there's some issues with once you expose things online, there's possibility for someone to either hack or break into it. So.
Excellent. Moving on, we talked about client expectations. Let's talk about the selection process. So, you know, for whatever set of reasons, you know, the agency's decided to make a change and, look at a new software service. Let's talk about the selection process. How extensive, how comprehensive should it be? You know, how wide do you start? You know, kind of where do you, what are the first few steps to get the ball rolling? And Ryan, maybe you can take that one.
Sure. So I was reading through some of the questions, and one of the questions here asked by Trish was, have the panelists converted to new collection software? I can answer that for us. We are in the middle of making our final decision. So to go back to the question that was asked about how comprehensive, I guess this is going to be an individual answer. How much do you want to scrutinize the software for what you need? I know with us, we've spent a little more time looking at it, where I've heard a few other agencies I'm in contact with switch a little bit faster than we have. But for us, we're using things like GitApp Online and other various software comparison tools. And I've noticed some of the ones that have been the premise base, the starters of the industry, really aren't focused on that. And that's a bit concerning to me. We use, like an Excel spreadsheet to match capabilities and have core processes that we deem highly needed, like web access online. I know for us, and this is probably something everybody's thought about at some point in time, is having a collection agency or collectors telework. Well, you know, the laws are really restrictive right now, and control is a very concerning thing for most agencies, but it's a capability that I want to be able to have on the table at some point in time. You know, if we scale the business or see a large client come in and we don't have the room for it, I don't want to pack up shop and move to another building. It'd be nice to scale that to another office or have some senior staff telework. So those are things that we're putting in our checklist that we're looking across and saying, do these, or does this agency or does this collection software meet this requirement? So
now you said you're in the final decision-making process. How long has that process been from start to now?
Sure. So we have had contacts, you know, just like any vendor out there, I want to say for about a year. We've actively been looking for about 6 months. What I've been told is the conversion process is about 6 months in and of itself. That, depending on the software company, is different. But I would expect about a half a year to really get a good feel for what that conversion process is going to be. So, and obviously it depends on the size of the agency, the capabilities of the staff, so on and so forth.
Got it. And Ed, if you were to decide this afternoon,
yeah, you know, I would say the first thing I would do is excuse me, Mike. The first thing I would do is contact other agencies. Who are they using? Who do they like? What software? Do they like using? What features do they want? Talk to people. I know there was a board on the ACA that were asking about different softwares and who everybody uses. Reach out. We're all there. We're all help one way or another. I think that's the best advice. And do a champion challenge. Same thing the clients do to us, do it to other, software companies, 30-day trial test. Take a small batch of accounts and do it that way.
Yeah, I agree with Ryan and Ed. I mean, I think it starts with a business requirements checklist of we have to be able to do these 50 things and these other 20 things are optional but good to haves, and start checking the boxes, looking at the different vendors. And then exactly to what Ed said, talk to references, and these software vendors will give you references, and you can ask that the software vendor not be present on that call or conversation with some of their clients, so you can ask, some of the tough questions.
Yeah, I think, you know, to give some of the audience a an actual indicator for how we've measured, one of the things I know I did, I actually went on ACA's directory and just went down all the registered vendors and put a list together and started reaching out and just seeing what they had. You know, for me, making sure that they're part of the ACA was something I wanted. I wanted to make sure that they had standards as a software company and they were, you know, tuned in to what the industry was hearing. So.
Is, you know, the company one of the seven?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, is the company you're working with one of the companies that was on that list?
They are, yes. Yes, they are.
Ed, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead.
So, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, and I mentioned this before about, you know, GitApp being one of the review websites, Captera being another one. There's a lot of software review websites out there that are focused on larger tech companies from Silicon Valley, so on and so forth. I have noticed the ones that are paying attention are out there getting feedback and reviews in those major sectors. So I'm using that as a tool to, you know, I know not every agent or every collection software is going to be using these different channels. Some of them are going to be doing the traditional method of relationship building from a who you know standpoint. But if I'm looking at, is this collection software going to integrate with major companies and really be at the forefront, then I want them using the same tools that, you know, we'll use a CRM program Salesforce is doing. So are they following some of the trending patterns that the tech companies are following that I want to integrate with? So that was one of the checklist items for me.
Ed, you mentioned Champion Challenger. Is that something you've done in the past? How has it worked? What would you recommend?
We did. When we were moving from the first platform, after using it for a year or so, we needed something that was a lot better, more features. So we put a couple software systems to the test, and we came up with the one that we really like. And I'll tell you why. There's a large medical billing company out there, and in order to receive placements, their clients want to be able to press a button, basically, and send the account to us. One of the software companies had their IT person on the phone with their IT person within a matter of days discussing how they can make this API work. That sold me right there. And they didn't even have my business yet. That sold me. If they were that in tune to speak with them that fast to try to get that going, that's somebody I want to be on board with.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, yeah, we discussed this a little bit in some of the previous questions, but you have to look at this vendor as a partner, because your hope is, I mean, especially from a agency our size, we were looking to convert, you know, 50 million accounts and 2,000 clients. Conversion isn't quick. And you want a system that you can relax with for, you know, 4 or 5 years at the minimum, without having to go through that conversion constantly.
That's the shelf life, you think, Jonathan, of these days, is sort of 4 or 5 years before you have to sort of revisit again?
I would hope not. We were on our previous software platform for 14 years, and it took us 3 to 4 years to convert fully. We kind of did it in stages and phases. So I'm hoping to get 15 years out of this one.
Well, just for reference, I know for us as an agency, we've been on our software for over 35 years. So for us, this is a large move. And that's something we have to factor in for our end users and employees. I've checked out a few references with the software company that we're really looking into, and ones that are similar size, similar capabilities have just ranted and raved about how easy it was and they should have done this earlier. So that helps checking those references and getting out there and seeing what other people are doing as well. So
does it work better to use the references that the company provides or to try and go out and find them on your own instead?
I think a little bit of both. Each company obviously is going to put their best foot forward, you know, just like one of us are going to do. But being able to, with our community through collections, you can reach out to somebody you met at ACA or somebody who's in an association that's local to find out whether or not their conversion was good. You know, obviously, you get close enough and we're all talking to our competitors, so we want to have a competitive edge, but ultimately, there should be somebody close enough that's converted as well. So,
are you finding that more these days that, you know, that the software is a competitive differentiator, when you're looking for business against other collection agencies?
I would hope so. And I've had this discussion with both vendors and collection agency owners. You know, ultimately what I'm looking for is a core set of programming values or abilities that the software can offer. And then I want to be able to add in some of our customization so we can obviously differentiate ourselves from other agencies. And I think that, you know, when we all go to the table and, you know, healthcare's 33% share or market share for the industry, you know, it's a highly competitive market out there. So we have to have ways to differentiate ourselves. If we're all using the same software, similar software, there has to be something that we're doing. So another one of our checklist items was, can we customize? Can we write our own programs or integrate? And I think that's an important part for the industry to, and each agency to differentiate themselves. So,
yeah, I agree. Kind of in all three of those points, we found in a lot of our RFP processes that security capabilities, security certifications, and capabilities are part of what has, you know, helped win the deal. Obviously, the client, you know, comes down to price. But, you know, when we're able to say that we're PCI compliant and the other bidders on the RFP or not, you know, it gives us a leg up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ultimately, I think most of our clients are looking for two things. They're looking for, can you recover the money? And are you going to protect my reputation? So the reputation obviously is tied to compliance and security requirements, which is something that we all have to look out for. And hopefully those software companies will catch most of that. Internal policy writing is going to have to be one aspect that each agency handles. But, you know, those are those deciding factors when we're looking at our checklist as well. So
we've only got a few minutes left. So if anyone has them, there are a few questions here in the queue. But if you have a question now, it'll probably be the best time to open up the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel and type it in, and we'll try to get to it before we end in a few minutes. Before we get to the questions, one of the things I wanted to ask, and we've talked a little bit about that with respect to, you know, having to hire additional staff or new staff, but are there other areas that maybe agencies overlook when selecting a new software provider? Are there sort of mines in the ground that you can kind of help maybe some agencies avoid when they go through the process of setting up with a new software vendor? Maybe, Jonathan, you could take that one first.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of the ones we've discussed cover it. I mean, for us, it was the hiring of additional staff. It was the, you know, we probably didn't do enough due diligence on the gap analysis of, you know, hey, we need these 200 things and you got 190. Okay, we're good. And then we find that those 10 things ended up being very, very costly to custom develop later. I think that's just the important thing is, and it goes back to how you vet these vendors and how long you should spend doing it. It can be very costly to do that. You know, the cost of non-compliance is higher than the cost of compliance.
So does that mean, you know, agencies should be willing to sort of abandon, you know, if they get down the road with somebody, but they come to some kind of roadblock or some speed bump, you know, do they need to be able to sort of make that decision to walk away sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a tough decision to make, depending on, you know, you just can't think of it as it's a sunk cost, and you have to make the decision to get on to whatever system is going to be best for your company. And I think that goes back to vetting this vendor as looking at them as a long-term business partner, because if you get to a gap like that and you're not able to have them help you, you know, remove that gap and fix the problem, then you may have to go back or convert to a different system. So you want to make sure that whatever vendor you pick is going to work with you in case a scenario like that were to come up.
Yeah. I know we haven't converted yet, so I can't speak about, you know, the historical aspect, but one thing we had looked at is, or what we did internally, was we did a performance analysis of all our employees and the manpower that we have, how much of a business impact that had against how much time was spent doing that, and ultimately if that action would recoup money. You know, obviously a collector is going to be making calls collecting, they're going to be bringing money in for the company, whereas, you know, supporting staff will be spending time that's not necessarily generating income, but is a necessary part of the business. So we tried to measure some of those supporting roles and if that software could help that, and how much of a value we could add with that software company. I think each agency is going to be different. You know, it depends on how they run. A good example is how they use letter services. Are they heavy in letters? Are they not? Are they heavy in calls or are they not? And that would dictate on how the software can support that. So,
I mean, is there something at this point that could happen? I mean, theoretically, that, you know, would cause you to sort of decide that you want to walk away from this particular vendor and go with somebody else?
I think a lot of times, especially for us, it comes down to your largest clients. First and foremost, you've got to be able to meet their requirements. If you know, you've got a major client that's a major part of your revenue and they need functionality that this system is not going to be able to provide, then you've got to risk either losing that big client or, you know, paying the cost of whatever that custom development is.
Yeah, I think as we all know, compliance is really the deciding factor. The bigger the company gets, the more compliance standards that they're going to have. So if you're wanting to win bids, you're going to have those compliance box checked, you know, the marks checked on there. So inevitably, yes, if they don't, that software doesn't meet those compliance standards, it's something either you're going to lose that client or you're going to have to walk away from that software vendor and find something better.
Yeah, that's something that we've seen in the industry too, is just the compliance costs are getting so high that it's, you know, pushing a lot of smaller agencies out of the game just because of the compliance costs to enter.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's, I guess, one of my wish lists for any of those software vendors would be a compliance module added in. You know, what that means, obviously, could go to detail from audit logs and reports to automated notices to even getting into machine learning. If something happens, notify me here, create a log and something I can report back to the client.
Correct. So, yeah. I want to see more intelligent design within these systems. The capabilities there, it needs to be more implemented, especially when it gears toward compliance. And I would love to see most of these software companies get away from the fact that, yeah, I can write software. For a collection agency, it's only database, but I want to see more of a compliance side driven.
Yeah,
I know that within that gap.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sorry, go ahead.
One aspect I guess we haven't really talked about much is that some of these software vendors too, I mean, they know compliance is table stakes at this point. Some of them are starting to also look into the usability of the system. A lot of time these collection systems are very archaic or require tons of institutional knowledge to learn. And as I'm sure we're all aware, the collection industry and collectors and phone reps is a very high turnover position, and constantly retraining these collectors is a problem for all of us. So making these systems more intuitive and usable for the collectors and, you know, that demographic of employee, we're seeing some of these software vendors get into user interface design. We talked to one that said that they were putting a laser on the side of a collector's head to see what area of the screen they focused on the most and put all the important information in that area of the screen. And, you know, things like that to make it enjoyable and more usable for the collectors, because ultimately they're the ones bringing in the money.
Yeah, I know we do.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, we do an analysis on our 30-day collectors. When we have new ones in, we'll measure how well they're learning, how adaptable they are, and where they're at as far as with our current system. I'll be honest, that's one of our main deciding factors for looking into a new collection software, along with our other capabilities, is end-user usability. Can I hire somebody who seems like they're competent enough to collect, and can they use the software? If it takes them 3 to 6 months to really grasp the understanding of the collection screen, to me, that's not a good software. And another area where I think some of these software companies can really build out is a good education and resource center for those end users and managers and supervisors. If, you know, this could cut down on obviously a lot of support tickets by those companies, but do they have, you know, a quick, you know, help button, or is there on a field that maybe isn't easily understood, something where an end user can click on a little bubble and it will pop out, here's how to use this? Or is that something that an agency can customize? Those are those types of forward thinking that I'm looking for from a collection software.
I tell you what, with our software, we have the ability to do that. If somebody has a question, they click the chat help desk, and we have somebody live right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect. It really is.
Excellent. Well, we're almost out of time. And I think we've gotten to just about all the questions in the queue. One of the things I'd like to do before we wrap up is to maybe go around the panel and give each panelist the opportunity to share some parting thoughts or a key takeaway from the conversation today, or any sort of last words of wisdom that they want to share. And maybe Ed, we'll start with you.
Don't go with the first software you look at. Take a look around, speak with people, talk to the ACA. If so, give us a call. And any one of us, I'm sure, will be more than happy to answer any questions. And, you know, just make sure you have all your checklists in order. And if you find a software company that has almost all of them or most of them, take a look at them and use a trial period. Don't just dive in head first. They'll be more than happy for you to try their system.
Excellent. Thanks. Jonathan?
Yeah, I would say, you know, a lot of this revolved around building a business requirements checklist. A lot of that, at least for us, a learning experience was not realizing how many business processes that have been, you know, developed 20 years ago and are second nature to everyone that you don't even think about anymore. Is to go back to the drawing board, bust out Visio, a whiteboard, map out all of your business processes from start to end, you know, from the day you get the business to the day it's returned back to the client, all the different scenarios that could happen there, bankruptcy, disputes, how do you handle each of those situations in a flowchart. That'll help you build a better business requirement list once you've really stepped back and defined your business down to that degree.
Yeah. I'd like to leave a remark on encouraging people to continue to participate in these types of events, because ultimately when we have vendors listening in and participating from agencies themselves, that's really what's going to drive some of these changes. And hopefully having these discussions and not only talking about pain points from an individual aspect, but as a group, can really drive the focus of where some of these software companies are going to be going. So just keep tuned in and pay attention to some of these forums and websites. And I think, you know, we'll see some good stuff coming here in the next 5 to 10 years.
Excellent. Well, before I let everybody go, I want to thank Ed, Ryan, Jonathan for their insight and their time today. This webinar would not have been possible without their participation. Really appreciate them taking the time to share some important information. I also want to thank InterPros one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.interpros.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions and listened today. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. A recording of this event will be posted to the site in the next couple of days. I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Mike. Mm-hmm.